This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the parsha today, we learn about the dispute between Korach and his people on the one hand and Moshe and Aaron on the other hand. And there are many things to talk about on the parsha, but I want to focus on a strange inconsistency. In expressing the objections of Korach and his people, and we've got to bear in mind that Korach and his people were all great people. They weren't ordinary people, they weren't insignificant people. And this was the only thing they did wrong. And what they did wrong was not so dramatic, it was fairly minor. Chazal say it was a machlekes shalosh l'shem shemayim. That was what was wrong. It was not l'shem shemayim. But if it were l'shem shemayim, if the intent were right, it wouldn't be a big issue. It's not the fact that they disputed Moshe. We've often talked about the fact that the whole system of the Torah, both the educational system and the social system and the political system of the Torah, encourages questioning, encourages analysis and examination, and even sometimes certain conflicts and tensions. There's nothing wrong in, and even criticism. Yisroel, Moshe's own father, said to Moshe, don't think you're the only one who can deal with shailas, don't think you're the only one who can judge. Delegate more, set up smaller courts that you can delegate to. People have criticized Moshe Rabbeinu, and he took it quite well. There wasn't a major issue. The issue was, it's a machlikas shaloi l'shem shemayim. That's all. So these were great people. They slipped up on the l'shem shemayim. And what is their argument? Ki chol ha'edo kulom kadoshim uvesoichom Hashem. Everybody has sanctity here. You're not the only ones. We're dealing with a community of very, very great people, they say. Surely there are others apart from your own immediate family that are capable of godliness, that are capable of greatness. Why are you taking it all for yourself? Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. That's their claim. And why are you lording it over this nation? Who gave you the right to lord it over? You're arrogant. That's the criticism. What's Moshe's defense? Vayichal Moshe Moed, and Moshe got very angry. Vayomer Hashem, al teifei el mechosom, don't accept their korbanos. Lo yichamor echad mehem nososi, v'lo yarayosi es echad mehem. I never took one donkey of theirs, I've never damaged any one of them. Says Rashi, lo yichamor sherechad mehem notalti afilu kishalachti mimidyan l'mitrayim, when I went on business from Midian to Mitzrayim, that was a business trip. I wasn't going for pleasure. I was going to get them out of trouble. Virkavti es ishti vesbona el achamur. And I had to take my wife and my family and I had to transport them from Midian to Mitzrayim. This was communal business. I'm entitled to ask for a community medical. They should have provided the transport. Even then, when I was fully entitled to charge my traveling expenses to the company, I paid for it myself. Who criticized him on that issue? He's not answering on the question. They didn't say he's a ganav. Nobody's accusing him of theft. Nobody's accusing him of putting personal expenses on the company account. Nobody's accusing him of cheating the receiver of revenue. Nobody's accusing him of taking community money for personal needs. Nobody said a word about that. All that Korach said is, Lamatis Nasu. Why must you keep yourself so high? Why are you so arrogant? Why are you uplifting yourself over the people? Kulam kadoshim v'tzeicham Hashem. They're all holy people. These are great, great people. You're not the only one that's so great. And your brother and your immediate relatives, there are a whole lot of other people who are also great. There are many candidates for the positions that have become available that you don't have to keep it. Why don't you rotate the leadership? Why don't you give others a chance? That's all he's saying. I'm not saying you're a ganav. So Moshe's reaction doesn't fit the accusation. Moshe's defense is not defending the accusation. And this leads me into a discussion on the whole issue of kavod, where we'll formalize a lot of ideas that we've talked about vaguely previously and tie them together. In Shoftim, Perek Yud Aleph, the story of Yiftach. Yiftach was a neglected person, nobody took much notice of him. And then it tells us Vayehi kasher nilchamu v'nei Amon im Yisrael. When B'nai Amon started fighting with Yisrael, vayelchu ziknei Gilad lokachas es Yiftach me'eretz Tov. They went to get Gilad. They went to Gilad to get Yiftach. Yiftach, they felt, was an army general capable of handling the threat of B'nai Amon. So they'll take him. You'll have to negotiate a salary with him, negotiate conditions. They thought it wouldn't be a big deal. And they came to Yiftach and they said, come and be our general and lead our battle against Bnei Amon. So Yiftach says to the elders of Gilad, you hated me. You threw me out of my father's house. And now when you've got a problem, you come to me. Is that the right kind of response? They're in trouble. Is it the time to get faribled? Is it the time to start picking an argument with them? They're about to fight a battle. So they say, you're right, but shavnu ilecho, we're sorry, we've come back to you. Please join us and lead us against Bnei Amon. And you'll be the head of all the dwellers of Gilad in this battle. Says Yiftach, Vayomer Yiftach el ziknei Gilad. Says, okay, a deal, a condition. If you put me in that position to lead the battle against Bnei Amon, and Hashem gives them before me and we win the battle, I want the job of president. Then I'm the boss. They say, yes, deal. What's he running after? COVID? Yiftach's a godol. Yiftach, great, great man. They've asked him to help him out in a battle. Go and fight the battle. Help them out. It's a mitzvah. What are you negotiating your position of power afterwards? Is this politics? And yet he's not criticized for it. Chazal don't criticize him and say he's roidef achar hakovid. He's pursuing honor. And we're told you're not supposed to pursue honor. So the treatment of COVID in Chazal is very ambiguous. On the one hand, there are all these things about how terrible COVID is. And on the other hand, you see a case like this, not criticized at all. Further on in Shoftim, a very similar case to the Moshe case. Shimshon is sitting there about to try and destroy the Plishtim. Vayikra Shimshon el Hashem vayoma. Shimshon calls out to Hashem and he says, Hashem elikim. Zochreini no remembi mina. Vechazkeini no achapam hazeh elikim. And give me strength this last time, one more time, give me the strength. And let me just get back at the Plishtim for one of my blinded eyes. So Chreinino, what does he say? Remember me, remember my schus. Because of the schus of what I did, give me the strength, explains Rashi. Zochor chof shono sheshofatati is Yisrael v'lo yamati le'echod mehem ha'aveli makel ze mimokim lemokim. Remember that for 20 years I was a judge and I never said to one of the Jewish people, just pass me that pencil over there or pass me that stick. Never asked anybody to do anything for me. I never used them. Asked Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, what does that mean? That he's saying he didn't get any benefit from them. But what about the COVID? If he was a judge for 20 years, if he was a leader for 20 years, surely he got a lot of COVID from them? Good, so he never asked them to move a stick for him. He never asked them to do anything material for him. But what about COVID? They gave him honor. Why does he place so much emphasis on the fact that he never took a material favor from them? He got COVID from them. Once again, similar to the Moshe case. They're coming along and saying, why are you taking all the COVID? Answers Moshe, but I never took a donkey. Shimshon comes along and says to Hashem, remember that I never asked them to move a stick for me. But other forms of COVID, and Moshe also, Moshe got a lot of COVID. And that's what he's being accused of, and he's not defending that. What is this confusion between honor, the COVID, which here seems to be okay, that's not an issue. Shimshon's not saying, and that I got COVID, I'm sorry, I want to do tshuva, it was a terrible thing, I didn't want the COVID, I didn't ask for the COVID, for the honor. He doesn't say that, he's not embarrassed about the COVID he got. And Moshe's not embarrassed about the COVID he got. What he's saying is, but more than that, I didn't take anything material, I didn't take anything physical. So what is this? Why isn't the COVID seen negatively here? On the other hand, with the Meraglim, the COVID is seen negatively. The Mesillas Yeshorim says in the end of Perek Yud Aleph, Mi goram le kurach shi yaved hu v'chol ados ha'imah. Who caused kurach to disappear? It was kovod he was after. Hu she goram le fidas chazal el hameraglin shi yotziu diba al horitz. What caused the meraglin? The meraglin were also great people. Talks about anoshim, they were men, and Chazal Rashi brings it. When the Torah says men, it's what the Torah calls men, not what the Springboks call a man. It was a real man, an ish is a person of enormous stature, of enormous tzidkus, of enormous chokhmah. That's who the meraglim were. What caused them to talk negatively about Eretz Yisrael? Miyirosom pen yemoit kvedom b'knisas ha'oretz, shelo yiyuhem nesiyim liYisrael, v'yamdu acherim b'mkoymom. They feared they would be moved out of their positions of authority. They would lose their jobs. Somebody else would get their job. And that fear enticed them to rather dissuade Klal Yisrael from going into Eretz Yisrael. They were willing to dray around in the desert for the rest of their lives. They would rather have gone back to Egypt as long as they would have retained their position. What was their position? You would think they were at least Nasiim. They were at least princes of the whole Shevet. One of 12. They weren't. Says the Baal HaTurim, Roshei B'nei Yisrael Hemo. They were the heads of B'nei Yisrael, and that they wanted to hang on to, and they were afraid in Eretz Yisrael they wouldn't remain the heads. So they wanted to cling to their positions of power. What position of power was it, says the Baal HaTurim? Hemo is a hey, mem, hey, that adds up to 50. Says the Baal HaTurim, they were Sorei Chamishim. They were heads of 50. You know how it used to work there? There was a head of 1,000, there were heads of hundreds, there were heads of 50, and heads of tens. They were Rabbonim that had a kehillah of 50 families. That's the size of Kehillat Torah. That's it. There wasn't a big shul. Each one was a rov of a small shul, a small minyan, 50 families. They were afraid of losing that position. Says the Mesillas Yesharim, that fear of the loss of kovod caused them to talk the way they did about Eretz Yisrael. And so here we see the negatives of it. What the desire for kovod can do. So why is Yiftach not criticized for demanding kovod to save the Klal Yisrael from Bnei Amon? Why is he not criticized? Why isn't Moshe not criticized? It's all very well he didn't take the donkey, but he took kovod and he hung on to it and he wouldn't let Korach take it away from him. And that's Korach's criticism. If kovod's not important to you, let's be democratic about it. Let's decide, let's choose who we want. Why are you hanging on to it? And yet in the case of Shimshon says, I didn't ever ask anybody to pass a stick for me, but the kovod, that's nothing, I'm not embarrassed about the kovod. Whereas here, Chazal tells us, and the Mesillas Yesharim brings it, the danger of kovod. Kovod altogether is a strange concept. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, we've spoken about it before, in Kuf Beis, the Gemara says, Tefosei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYerovim BeVigdoi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grabbed Yerovim by his jacket. And he said to him, Yerovim, I've got a deal for you. Yerovim was a Rosha, but he was a big Talmid Chochem. And he says, Yerovim, I've got a deal for you. Chazor becho v'ani v'ato v'yishai n'tayel b'gan Eden. Do tshuva. And you, and David HaMelech, and I, we'll walk together, we'll go for walks in Gan Eden. Imagine what that is. Imagine a Godel b'Yisrael phones you up and says, look, let's make a deal. Once a day, we'll go for a walk together. He would jump at it. And then whatever he asked you for it. Comes the HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself and says, you and David HaMelech and I will go for walks regularly in Gan Eden. Just do tshuva. Yerovim says, that sounds very attractive. He says, just tell me, Omale, mi barosh. Who will be standing in the middle? You, me, or David? Amale ben Yishai Barosh says, I say, Hashem, I want David in the middle. David will be at the head. I'll be on one side, you'll be on one side. David will be in the middle. Amale Yahi Lobhina says, in that case, forget it. Not interested. And it sounds weird, but we've got the same kind of thing in the Megillah with Haman. All that honor and all that glory that Haman had. He had the ear of Achashverosh. He was the prime minister. He led the whole nation. Everybody bowed down in front of him. One little Yid didn't bow down. Only one. It wasn't the whole Jewish nation. The rest of the Sanhedrin, you remember, we talked about, did bow down to him. It was only Mordechai who held that it wasn't right. For him, for Mordechai. Mordechai didn't paskin for the rest of Klal Yisrael. Mordechai paskin for himself, as from the Shevet of Binyamin, that it wasn't right to bow down. So one Jew is not bowing down. And it destroyed his life. He couldn't tolerate it. He couldn't stand it. That's the nature of COVID. So if COVID is so destructive and so negative, why is there such a chiyuv to be mechabed other people, to honor other people, if it's so dangerous? It's interesting when the whole question of lifnei iver, of not leading people into dangerous situations. Very, very interesting. I was speaking to somebody the other day who just escaped death very narrowly. I said, how did it happen? Well, he was in a motor car accident. He told me he just bought a new motor car, one of these very fancy ones, and he described it to me. He said, it's a lethal weapon. He said, you can't help traveling at speeds that you have absolutely no control. It's not possible to have any control. And he was questioning the ethics of selling such motor cars. Fantastic feeling of power, and it's wonderful, this is, but it's, there's no way that you can get any pleasure out of it without risking your life and the life of other people. If COVID's at least as dangerous as that motor car he was driving. I won't tell you which one it is, in case any of you have got it. I doubt it. But COVID is at least as dangerous as that motor car that he was driving. If this is what it can do to a Yerova, if it's that what it can do to a Homa, that's what it can do to the Meraglim. Look how dangerous it is. Great people, the Meraglim. Great, great people. And they destroyed an entire nation because they wanted to hang on their position of being the rabbi of a shtibble of 50 people. Because of that, they were prepared to allow Klal Yisrael to go around in the desert for the rest of their lives. That's the destructive force of COVID. So there should be an Isser, it should be forbidden to show honor to other people. It's dangerous for them. How can you put them in that position of danger? You're going to be mechabed somebody else, and it might cause him destruction. Not a good thing. And yet Chazal say, you've got to be mechabed a parent, you've got to be mechabed a talmidei chachomim, you've got to be mechabed older people, you've got to be mechabed everybody. Kovod habrius. Extreme degree of kovod habrius. Show honor to people. Honor people over and over and over again. We're told and we see examples of it. Show honor to people. Treat people with kovod. The same word is used. It's not dignity and honor, two different words. Kovod, the same word is used. That same word that we're told keep away from because it's a lethal weapon, we're told but give it to other people in large doses. Generously give it to them. It's like dishing out cyanide tablets. What are we doing it for? On what basis are we allowed to? And some of you might remember when my father was here, he spoke once about the fact that he asked Reb Elia that question. And Rebellia answered, I won't give you the answer now, I'll give it to you later on, because the shiur will really be explaining Rebellia's answer. To deal with it, I'm going to use the principles of our last shiur 2 weeks ago. And I'm going to summarize them. For those who weren't here, it's so that you'll know what I'm talking about. And for those who were here, it's also so that you'll know what I'm talking about. I'll go through it fairly quickly and simply. The one was the Gemara in Tainis about the Bor v'Chuldo, the pit and the cat, where the Gemara says that we learn the power of emuno, the power of trust, from the story of the Bor and the Chuldo. And Rashi and Tosfos bring the story from the Yerushalmi that a young man and a young woman met each other. You remember she was in a pit, she couldn't get out, she was shouting for help. He comes by, sees her in the pit, and she's a very attractive and beautiful young lady, and he says, I'll do a deal with you. If you'll marry me, I'll take you out. Otherwise, you stay here. So she marries him. She says yes, she agrees. She comes out of the, pulls her out of the pit, and they make a deal. They're still young. They make a deal that they're going to get married. They'll wait for each other. And they say, who'll be witnesses? And they say, the pit, this pit, and the cat that's passing by, those will be the witnesses. Time goes by, they go their own ways, and he marries somebody else, forgets about her and marries somebody else. As a child, the child falls into a pit and dies. As another child, the child gets eaten by a wild cat. And his wife says, what's going on? This is twice, this has happened, there's something funny, these are unusual deaths of children, what's it all about? He says, my goodness, pit and cat. She says, what are you talking about, pit and cat? He tells her the story. Long ago, many years ago, this was the story, I met this young girl, and that's the deal we made. And she said, in that case, you divorce me immediately, and you marry her. You promised her, you go and find her, and you marry her. Which he did. And we talked about the fact that the Bor v'Chuldo, what Chazal is telling us, is the power that was given to those inanimate objects, or that in one case the inanimate object, in the other case an animate but not a human object, a cat, a wild cat, and a pit were given the power to be able to kill, the power to be able to arrange a marriage, to ensure that a marriage takes place, through the trust that the two put in them. And the Gemara makes a kal vachomer. If a boer and a chuldo can act in that way to being trusted, how much more so when one trusts the Ribbono Shel Olam? That's why the Gemara says that Ein ha-gishomim yodim elo bishvil ba'alei amono. That the reason that rain comes down is because people trust Hashem. If it weren't for the people who trusted in Hashem, there wouldn't be any rain. And you must realize that rain means more than rain. Geshem is gashmius. Rain means the whole economy. Rain means wealth. Rain means brocha. Rain means everything. Without rain, there's nothing. So the whole wealth of nations results from people who trust. Explains Tosfos in Gemara Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, I think, or Lamed Aleph, on the Gemara that says, Emunas ze Seder Zroim, that belief in Hashem is tied to Seder Zroim, to the agricultural halachas, to the Seder of Shas, the section of Shas that deals with the agricultural laws. Why? Shemamin Bechei Olamim Vezoreya. What makes a person plant? The fact that he trusts that it will rain. If he didn't trust that it would rain, he wouldn't plant. So he believes in the Ribbono Shel Olam. You might say he believes in nature. Good. Who made nature? He believes in the continuity. He believes in the future. There would be no future without the belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is no future. And therefore, anybody who invests money is showing trust. He's showing trust in other people, and he's showing trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. I think it was the Prophet Chaim who explained in the Great Depression, or possibly even before the Great Depression of the late 1920s and early 1930s, he said the Great Depression would come or came because the fact that people had lost the Emunah and the Ribbono Shel Olam. He said Hashem needs to show what happens if you don't trust. And he showed how the Depression was a result of no trust. People didn't trust each other. People had no confidence in the future. The moment people lose confidence in the future, you're into recession. That's why you'll see in the paper they keep on showing you the confidence, the business confidence indicator, because that shows whether we're in or out of recession. If people trust that there's a better tomorrow, then we're out of recession. If people think there's a worse tomorrow, we're into recession. It's as simple as that. It's an emotional thing. If I think tomorrow will be worse than today, I don't spend, I don't invest, I don't employ, nothing expansive. I pull back. If I believe that tomorrow might be better than today, I grow, I develop, and I invest. That's how it is. So it's a question of trust. And if people start trusting each other, I won't buy shares in your company because I don't believe it's going to be any better tomorrow. I won't invest. I won't lend you money. I won't employ you. I won't accept employment because I don't know that you'll pay me at the end of the month. When trust breaks down, the whole economy breaks down. The Chofetz Chaim said the Great Recession was to teach that there has to be trust in the world. And trust is a middah, whether you direct it at human beings or you direct it at the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's the same middah. You've got to learn to trust. It's a very, very important thing. There was one company I was dealing with. It took me a long time to work out what was wrong with them. I was trying with all sorts of intellectual things to deal with them. Eventually I realized they just don't trust each other. The management team didn't trust each other. That's what I found. Once I realized that, it was easy what to do with them. I took them outdoors. We took them up a cliff. And we made them go over the cliff with these ropes and things like that, where each one had his life in the hand of one of his colleagues. And it was amazing to see the terror in these people's faces. And we made it do it. It was unbelievably scary. And these big, big, egoistic business people shaking, trembling, white. What are you scared of? He's holding on to you. He's not going to let you go. Very hard for them to trust their friends. It was very hard. One can't operate in a business, one can't operate in a family, one can't operate in a relationship if there isn't trust. And one can't operate in a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam if there isn't trust. The fact that you plant is a function of trust. You wouldn't invest, you wouldn't plant if you didn't trust that there's a future. And Ein Geshomim Yodim Ela Bishvil Ba'alei Emunah. It's not that because the people trust because the rain comes. The rain comes because people trust. If you trust the Ribbono Shel Olam, he'll bring the rain. Not because he brought the rain, I'm willing to trust. Trust works the other way around. Trust that the person who hasn't had delivery has to take the leap of faith. You don't get delivery and then trust. That's not trust anymore. Trust is before you've got delivery. You believe you'll get delivery. And if you're not willing to make that belief, business grinds to a halt. And so does your relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam grind to a halt. The same person I told you about who nearly died was talking to me about why he thought that he survived. He's a goy, but I think he's a righteous goy. And he was saying, he describes a lot of it to the Ribbono Shel Olam, is questioning why God saved him. But he said, apart from that, he inquired at the hospital as to what his chances were when he came around. And they said, no, you had no chance. So they said, so how come I survived? They told him because they said that we've never seen nursing staff and doctors work on a patient the way they worked on you. Never seen it. It's just never happened before. And had they let up for 1 minute, you wouldn't have been alive. It was the unbelievable Mesiras Nefesh, day and night, particularly the nursing staff, but also the doctors. So he thought, that's very interesting. So he got the nurses together. He said, this is what I've been told, that you saved my life, and that nobody in the hospital has ever seen nurses work on somebody the way you worked on me. They said, yep, you're right, we've never worked on anybody like that. There's never been such willingness and such harmony and such dedication for a patient that we've ever seen as there was for you. So he said, what happened? How did it happen? They said, it's because of your wife. He said, why? What did she do? They said, she came in when you were brought in here, and she called us all together, and she said, I want you to know, this man is incredibly special. I'm asking you to believe me, not because he's my husband. You'll get to know him and you'll see that I'm right. I'm leaving him in your hands. I'm not interfering. I'm not going to ask any questions. Do whatever you need to do. You don't have to check with me. You don't have to do anything. Just do what you need to do. When you need me, call me. When you want me out of here, tell me to get out of here. I'll do whatever you want and I'll leave him in your hands. But remember, he's a special man. They said, usually the wives are on top of us and they keep on asking, are you sure you gave him something to eat? And are you sure you did this? And are you sure you did that? And if they don't trust us, then let them do the job. But here was a woman who said, we trust you. We believe you'll do your best. We had to. We had no option. She put your life in our hands. So what was it that saved his life? The fact that his wife trusted the medical staff. That's what saved his life. Apart from the Ribbono Shel Olam in terms of the human interaction. That's what did it. But she was willing to show that trust. Before delivery, she was willing to say, I have confidence in you. And after the last shiur 2 weeks ago, Dr. Wolowitz came up to me and he said, as a surgeon, he can tell me that every time a patient comes to him and says, you know, should we do this operation? Do you mind if I get a second opinion? Are you sure it's necessary? Are you sure you're doing the right procedure? Are you sure I'll be okay? You know, take care, watch out. And even as they're sort of going out under anesthetic, they're waving their finger at him and warning him to be careful. He says, guarantee something goes wrong. Every time. Something goes wrong. He says, a patient that says, doctor, I don't know what's going on here. You, the specialist, do it carefully. I'm in your hands. And whatever you say, I'll do. That's it. Guaranteed. Nothing goes wrong. Absolutely. He says, every time. So one sees it. One sees it like that in all professions. One sees it in business. You have to trust first. You know, and sometimes you get let down. That's the dangers of trust. Sometimes you get let down. And that's life. But don't stop trusting. Trust with seichel. Don't trust people who are not trustworthy. But if a person appears to be trustworthy, if he appears to be competent, if he appears to be reliable, he appears to be a modest person, trust. Because if you don't trust, you don't get delivery. It's not the other way around. It's not give me delivery and then I'll trust you. It's trust and then you'll get delivery. And it's exactly the same with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Trust Hashem and then there'll be delivery. The reason Hashem brings the rain is because there are people who trust in Him. And who are the people who trust in Him? The Yidden who's standing in Shul Davening Shabbos Minchen Ma'ariv, no, the farmers who plant are the people. They're the ones who really trust. The businessmen out there who invest, they're the ones who trust Him. That's Emunah, that's Bitochen. Bitochen is not standing in Shul and having no risk and saying, I believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam without any risk. To believe, put your money on it, let's see. Put your money on the future and then see if you trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. To say, I trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, I believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, I daven every day, I learn, I do all the right things, I keep Shabbos, and I lie awake wondering and worrying about what's going to be tomorrow. Where's the bitochen? That's not bitochen. Bitochen is the person who's got money on the table and he sleeps peacefully at night because he knows the Ribbono Shel Olam's handling it. See, that's bitochen. And it's because of those people, it's the business people who are investing that make the Ribbono Shel Olam keep the economy going. You're willing to invest in the future, I'll deliver a future. You're not willing to invest in the future, I'll withdraw a future. There won't be a future. It's your trust that determines whether you're in recession or not. It's got nothing to do with economics and with trends and with cycles. It's got to do with bitochen. It's got to do with the extent to which the economic population believes that there's a future or not. And what is the nature of that trust? What are we saying? That the Ribbono Shel Olam responds to that trust. We gave another example where the Sipurnu said in Baal Oisecho Perik Yud Aleph Halacha Yud Beis, when Moshe said Ha'anoichi Horesi have I given birth? Did I conceive this nation? Did I give birth to them? That you're saying to me that I must carry them as a baby, as if I'm their mother? Said the Sipurna, you'll remember, a tragic Sipurna. A father can lead his children, even though they differ, they disagree with each other, they disagree with him, each one has his own mind, he can still be a father. A father can handle, he can manage a family of diverse people. The fact that they're part of the same family doesn't mean they're all the same. Look at families that you know. Different people come out of them. People with different talents, different abilities, different outlooks. Father can handle it. Why? There's one common belief that all the children have, and that is that the father loves them and will do everything in their interests. That's what gives him the keach to be able to lead them. Aval ele einan boitchin bi klal. But these people don't trust me. V'chushtinim anasin uris ma'eseh ba'adam, and they keep on testing me. I can't lead them. So what is Moshe saying? What gives the power, the father, the power to lead diverse people, is that they trust him. And that trust is what energizes the person. That's the nature of bitochen, that's the nature of trust. Trust is a form of energy that one is able to transfer to people. So the Gemara said that I brought you also in Chulin, La'ilam yoichel adam v'yishte pochus mimashi yeshlo. When it comes to your own food and drink requirements, spend less than you've got. Be quite frugal on yourself when it comes to your own requirements. V'yilbosh v'yiskase b'mashi yeshlo. When it comes to dress, to those issues that are image related, those things that concern your relationship to others already, the way you dress is not just your own business. Despite what people think today, people think that the way you dress is your own business, dress the way you're comfortable. It's not so. Your clothing imposes something on other people. Your clothing is a communication to other people. And those people that tell me that dress is their own business and it doesn't matter and dress how you feel comfortable, I ask them a simple question. How do you dress when you go for a job interview? The way you dress when you go for a job interview is the way you dress when you come to shul. Any day, weekday, shachris, mincha, ma'ariv. You're going for something at least as important as a job interview. And that gives you an idea. If, taka, you go to a job interview with these jeans with holes in them and the t-shirt or whatever, shirt with your button open down to your belly button, and that's how you go to a job interview, fine. Then al pi halacha, you're entitled to come and daven that way too. But if when you go to a job interview you put on a suit and a tie, then you put on a suit and a tie for davening. That's the halacha. And you realize from that, when you think of a job interview, you realize how important clothing is. It's not just how you feel comfortable, it's how you look, what impression you're creating. That's what we use clothing for. In that case, when it comes to clothing, you spend a little bit more generous on yourself when it comes to clothing, because that's not just for you. That already begins to impact on other people. Your food and drink is your own business. Nobody else is affected by what you eat and drink. So you don't have to eat, you don't have to spend so much. When your clothing, that affects other people, you've got to spend a little bit more. But when it comes to spending on your wife and your children, you spend more than you've got. And then the Gemara adds, Shehein tuluyin boy, because they are dependent on you. So what if they're dependent on you? It's like the trade union said to me this week, what are you complaining about the taxes for? We need the money for the RDP. And I said to them, you can't run a business like that. You can't run a country like that. You need the money, so tax. We'll do it the other way around. How much money can we raise? And then you can figure out what our needs are, how you spend that money. Can't start off with saying what money you need and then steal the money to get it. Can't do that. What does it mean? Shem tzuluyin bo. Because your children are dependent on you, spend more than you've got on them. What does it mean? And how can you spend more than you've got? There's a very important yesod in that Gemara that we didn't do last time. Shehen tzuluyin boy, they need you. And therefore, what does it mean if they need you? They trust you. If they trust you, as the Sikruna says, you'll find the money, you'll manage, you'll stretch yourself, you'll manage. They energize you with their love and with their trust of you. Shehen tzuluyin boy, they need you. And that need will get you to excel. That need will get you to work a little cleverer, to work a little harder. You'll raise the money, you'll find the money. I said to you 2 weeks ago, nobody can afford to have children. It's not possible. when you work out what a child costs, nobody except the real top 0.1% of the population, if that, can afford to have children. Yet we have children, we manage. How does it happen? Shehen Tzuluyin Boy, it drives you to do more. And we said, sometimes people think, when my children are independent, then I'll have some money, we can start enjoying ourselves, we'll be able to go on that world cruise that we've wanted to all the time, we'll be able to travel overseas, we'll be able to take more holidays, it'll be okay once our children are set up. It doesn't happen. Once your children are set up, your earnings go down. Because you're not driven by that need. You're not driven by Shehen Tzuluyin Boy, people who need you. And that's why tzedakah, the more you give, the more you get. Because you need it. If you give tzedakah properly to the right causes, if you feel you're needed by them, that energizes you, that gives an energy, that's the trust. That's what gives you that power, and that's what gives you that strength to do it. The example I often give is that you phone up a doctor, and you say, "Doctor, my child is ill, can you put in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning?" We're still in a society where occasionally you find the kind of doctor who says, I'll come and see your child. How much will the doctor charge you? 100 rand, 150 rand, I don't know what his rates are. 180 rand, 200 rand, whatever his rates are. He'll come. He'll get dressed quickly and he'll get into his car and he'll go and he'll attend to you and he won't even feel tired. Energized. You'll think, what drives such a person? And you're not the only person. He's been called out before and he was called out last night and he'll be called out tomorrow night. And he does it. What would happen if you phoned the doctor and you said, "Doctor, I've got a problem. My computer's blown up. And I know that you're fantastic at computers. I know that's not your job, but I know you're good at computers. Now your normal rate for coming, if my child were ill, you would come for 200 Rand. I'll pay you 400 Rand to come and fix my computer." What's the doctor going to say? "It's not my job. Don't go and disturb me for that kind of nonsense. What's the difference? It's not the money that gets him out of bed at night. It's the fact that he's needed. That's all. If we feel that we're needed, if there's emergency, if there's somebody that needs us, we'll respond." People will find within themselves unbelievable resources of energy. If Hein Tuluyin Boy, if you feel somebody's dependent on me, somebody needs me, and can't get it anywhere else, I'm the only person that can provide it, I'll do anything. And so will anybody, if that's what it is. When you feel that there are other people that could do it as well, and he's taking advantage of you, that's a different story. But if you feel that you're the only person that can provide it, you'll do it. Shehen Tzuluyin Boy, that gives the energy. So much so, you remember that we learnt the Medrash in Parshas Kedoshim about the Ruchos, about the evil spirit at the well. And he says, "I've been here for so many years and nobody's ever been damaged by me. You don't even know about it, that I've been hanging around here. The women come to the mikveh, the men come. Nobody's ever been harmed. Now there's a bad ruach that wants to take this area over." And they say, "What should we do about it?" And he says, "Get everybody from the town to come out. Tomorrow there's going to be a battle here between me and the bad spirit. When you see the water starting to ripple, you'll know the battle's taken place. Get your sticks and your knobkiris and start banging on the ground and say, 'Ours is winning, ours is winning. Cheer up, cheer me on. And if you cheer me on, I'll beat him.'" And we talked about the relationship, that in relationship to the rugby. That was before the last rugby game. But we said, that's it. That's the power of the spectator support. That's the power of a president coming and shaking their hands before. That's the power of a South African Airways Boeing coming over and sweeping up and saying good luck. That's the power of 60,000 people cheering. It's an incredible power. You can't lose with that. What are they saying? "We trust you. We know you can do it. We need you to do it. It's important for us." That's all. You can't not win. Even that ruach, the Medrash says a kal vachomer, a shade, a ghost, a spirit that isn't created to help people or to be helped by people. It's an independent body. Yet if you give it support and you give it cover, you give it honor and you encourage it and you move it and you cheer it, it will win. And he knew it for sure, that spirit said, "I'll win if you do that. My victory depends on the extent to which you support me." And you need to do it with your sticks. You need to shout and you need to scream and you need to cheer and you need to sing Shoshaloza, and you'll see what will happen. And without that, nothing will happen. That's the power of COVID. That's what COVID can do. If you show a person the honor, and what does honor mean? "I need you. You're valuable. You're important. Can't manage without you." People will do anything. And they'll find within themselves unbelievable resources of energy if they're able, if that's how they're handled, if that's how they're treated. So let's get back to our discussion now of COVID. What then is COVID? COVID then becomes a force of energy. It becomes a force of energy that gives me the capacity to give. That's what it is. Without that, I can't give. That's the fuel, that's the energy that a person is in a position of giving, particularly if it's a person in a position of responsibility and authority. If he's in a position of giving, the force, the energy he needs in order to give is the force of COVID. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what COVID was created for. COVID is the power, it's the force that drives people to give more. Person gets the COVID, he gives more. Provided he's using it for giving. And that's Moshe's answer. Lama tisnasu al kahal Yisrael Korach says, why are you taking all this COVID? Says Moshe, but I've never taken anything. So what's wrong with the COVID? Then the COVID's for giving. I'm not damaging you. By taking COVID from you, you're not losing anything. That's the amazing thing with COVID. You give somebody honor, you're giving him enormous energy. What's it costing you? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's possible to give energy to the other person to such a degree that it can cost you nothing. And he can achieve so much with that energy. He can produce so much with that energy. And it's cost you nothing. That's the creation of energy. That's how one creates energy in the world. Einstein was wrong when he said you can't create energy. You can't create material energy. That you can only transfer from matter to energy and from energy back to matter. But you can create spiritual energy. Last Shabbos at Ellis Park Stadium, there was a creation of energy. It didn't come from somewhere. It was a creation of energy that wasn't there before. And they did the most amazing things. Had power. It gave them strength. Gave them a serious nefesh. Gave them courage. In a silly thing like a rugby game. Can you imagine what happens if you direct that at the important things? That was the limud of this rugby. This rugby was a very, very many limudim. But that's the main limud. The power, that wouldn't have happened. These Bucks would never have won if the game was played in somewhere else. The other teams, I said to you last time, and I still believe it, the other teams were better teams. They had better skills, but not better courage. They didn't have the courage that these guys had. And where did they get that courage from? From the 60,000 people that were encouraging them. And you remember Pino saying afterwards, it wasn't 60,000. It was 43 million people. We felt it. That's what drove us. That's what enabled us to do it. That the country was united behind us. If you can do it for a stupid game of rugby, can you imagine what you can do it for something worthwhile? The energy that can be created and directed at people that enables them to do things and to achieve things. The question is it for taking or is it for giving? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, I receive a lot of COVID. If I was using it for my own self-interest, you would have a timer. You would have a claim. If you could show that I'm benefiting personally, but the only thing I'm using it for is to give my energies right back to you. You benefiting from it much more than me. I've got nothing out of it. It's all gone back to you. In that case, there's nothing wrong with COVID. And that's why Yiftach says, you want me to fight that battle? Trust me. Tell me that you're willing to make me your chief. Tell me that you're willing to make me your president. And make that appointment. On condition I win. I don't expect you to do it if I lose. But let me at least know that I've got you behind me, not just for this battle, but for the rest of our lives we're going to be working together. Because if I don't have that commitment, if I don't have that covering from you, I won't win the battle. If I don't have that supportiveness, I won't win the battle. I need you to be able to support me. And that's what Shimshon says. Sure, I had COVID while I was a dayan. 20 years I was a shofet. Of course I had honor. Nothing wrong with having honor. Only if I use it for myself, but I never even ask somebody to move a stick for me. I never use that honor for personal gain. I never use that honor to cause anybody else a lack of dignity. And so yes, COVID is a very important power in the world. But COVID is something you give. COVID is not something you take. And when you're giving COVID a worker for whatever it is that they're doing, we don't have time to go into great detail now in the question I'm going to pose to you, but I do want to raise the question and start the answer, and we'll have an opportunity to take it further. That is, if COVID is so important, why are we so reluctant to give it? If it's the force, if it's the energy of performance, why don't people use it? If you can get so much out of people, when you phone that doctor, he'll come in the middle of the night, and the reason doctors don't do it now is because that relationship of COVID has broken down. You remember in the old days, the doctor used to have a lot of COVID. A tremendous amount of COVID. I remember when our doctor used to come to our home for dinner or whatever. It was a yom tif. We used to be made to dress up in our Shabbos clothes. And we were, the doctors coming, and you talk to the dog, unbelievable COVID. And I was a little kid, when I remember, if I was in bed, I would stay awake, I would keep matchsticks in my eyes. If I knew the doctor was coming, please send him into my room that I can say goodnight to him, that I can say hello to him. People used to love their doctors, adore their doctors, worship their doctors. There was an element of COVID. For that, the doctor would do anything. Not the money. The doctors are responsible for the change. The doctors turned their practices into businesses. So fine, that has certain advantages and certain disadvantages. It's a business, it's a normal customer-supplier relationship. COVID's gone. People aren't mechabed their suppliers. That's a problem all of its own, and we can discuss it another time. But people aren't mechabed, they don't show honor to their suppliers. They consider it as a fair trade-off. On the contrary, the in-thinking now at the moment, although I don't accept it, is that the customer is king. It's the doctor who has to show COVID to the patient, because without the patient he hasn't got a living. So the whole thing is switched around. The doctor now becomes the eved, the supplier now becomes the servant, and the customer is the king. In that case, there's no COVID chance. Says the doctor, I'm not coming in the middle of the night. You've got a problem, go to the clinic, and I'll see you in the morning. It's not my problem if you've got something in the middle of the night. I'm a professional. You don't call your professional out in the middle of the night. You call your accountant out in the middle of the night because you're having a sleepless night. You've got a tax problem. You wait until the morning. Your child's sick. Go to the clinic. I'll talk to you in the morning. That's how the doctor responds today, because that element of COVID has been taken away. But if we treated our doctors with the kind of COVID they need in order to do their work properly, we would get a different kind of service from them. And that applies with any supplier. If that's so, and it's so obvious, why don't we do something about it? And the extent to which we don't do something about it is quite interesting. I often do this little demonstration with business people. I ask them to criticize somebody. And they get very excited, because they know how to do it. They've been taught at business school how to do it, and they get up and they do it beautifully, pat off. Say, for example, your secretary has produced a document for you. It's full of spelling mistakes, punctuation mistakes. It's badly laid out. And you're hurrying off to a meeting, and you're going to show this document there, and you're going to make an idiot of yourself. What do you tell her? And they do it beautifully. They say, look, Mary, or whatever her name is, this document just isn't up to your usual standard. The document's got spelling mistakes in it, punctuation mistakes in it. You've put me in a very difficult position. It's a bad document, and I don't want to see it happening again. And I say, that's beautifully done. You criticized the document. You didn't criticize the woman. You didn't say you're a bad woman. You're an incompetent secretary. You just said it's a bad document. Perfectly done. Let's try the other way around. A beautiful document. You're in a hurry. She sat up all night to make sure that at 7 o'clock in the morning you would have your document ready. Not a spelling mistake, not a punctuation mistake. She's corrected your mistake. She's laid it out better than you could have done. Absolutely magnificent. You come back from the meeting. Everybody said, what a beautiful document. What do you say to her? I say, Mary, that document was beautiful. It was fantastic. There wasn't a mistake in it. I was so proud of it. Everybody said it was fantastic. I said, you've done exactly the same thing. You've complimented the document, not the woman. Why don't you come around and say, Mary, you are an unbelievable person. A secretary like you, I've never had. I am so lucky to have a secretary like you. Never. They never do it. And then they say, it's a good idea, but they think that they give me all sorts of reasons why they don't do it in a business environment. You don't do that kind of thing. I said, what about at home? When your wife cooks you a magnificent supper, what do you say? Gee, that's a fantastic supper. Who are you complimenting? You're not saying, are you a wife? Are you a cook? Are you fantastic? Am I a lucky man? Never. Was that a supper? Pooh, does my tummy feel good? You're complimenting the supper, you're not complimenting the person. We don't compliment people. It's amazing how we don't compliment people. Never compliment a person. That was a good job of work. That was a good share you gave. That was a nice article that you wrote. That was a nice supper that you cooked. That was a nice document that you prepared. Never say you're great, you're fantastic. Why not? So I was giving this drosha to the chief executive of a large company, and just then, and he's saying, you know, you're right, I've never told my secretary she's really good. I said, but she is good. I deal with her, and I'm telling you she's good. He says, I know she's good. I've just never told her. At that moment, as if the Ribbono Shel Olam sent her in, she walks in to bring some tea. And he says, you know, I've never told you how wonderful you are. You are just one of the most wonderful secretaries, and I want you to know how very lucky I am to have a person like you working for me. What did she say? She said, don't forget that when it comes to appraisal times and salary increases. And I just put my... And she walked out, and she closed the door, and he looked at me. He said, that's why we never do it. And he's right, we're scared. We're scared we'll be taken advantage of. We're scared we'll be exploited. To give a person that kind of power, we do know how much power COVID gives. And we're afraid to give other people that power because they'll use it against us. And we're scared. It's the fear of exploitation. We're so terrified. That's why we don't do it. And so we need to know, and again, there isn't time to get into it now, that if we want to encourage an environment where we give each other COVID, there has to be a precondition. Hakoros HaTov has to be in place. We need to know how to accept COVID. We need to know what to do with that power. We've got to show people that they can trust us with that power. Because there's no power like the power of COVID. Giving a person COVID gives him power. And we won't do that to a person if we feel he'll use that power against us, that he'll exploit us. So that has to be in place first. And that we can discuss at a different time. As far as our shiur this evening is concerned, then we started off asking, if Korach asks, Lama tisnasu, why are you taking all this COVID? Moshe answers, I never took a donkey. We said, but that wasn't the accusation. Moshe's explaining, there's nothing wrong with taking COVID. It's being given to me. I'm not demanding it. The people are giving it to me and I need it. It's the tools of my trade. Without that COVID, I can't lead. You would be right if I've taken it for myself. Check me out and see if I've ever used people, if I've ever exploited people, if I've ever taken anything from them at their cost, if I've ever damaged them, used a donkey of theirs, even when I've been entitled to. How can you accuse me of taking the COVID? I do take the COVID and there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. And Yiftach says, I'll fight the battle if you give me the COVID. That's fine. I can't fight your battle if you don't give me the COVID. And Shimshon says, remember that I never took asked anybody to pass a stick. I got COVID. Sure, I got COVID. But I never exploited them. I never used them. If COVID is not exploited, then COVID is positive. When COVID is negative, it's only when it's exploited. Only when it's used negatively. And the Meraglim, what about those Meraglim? They wanted to hang on to their position. COVID is negative when you hang on to it at somebody else's expense. COVID is only of value if the receipt of that COVID doesn't cost other people anything. That's different to money. It's different to payment. Payment has got nothing to do with COVID. You used to pay your doctor in the old days too. That was payment. You paid him for his services. COVID was over and above that. Payment, of course, the other person sacrifices. That's the nature of payment. And that's why payment has a certain value. If I pay you, I'm showing you that I value you in a certain sense. I put my hand into my pocket and I take money which I could have spent on something else and I give it to you. That means I value the service you're giving me. That's one form of value. But COVID is only valuable when it doesn't cost the other party anything. If COVID starts to cost other people, then one isn't entitled to it. The Meraglim wanted to hang on to their position. That's fine. They're entitled to hang on to their position. That's a halacha. That's in the halacha. You can't take a position away from somebody. Just as you can't take something material away from somebody, COVID is a material asset in the Torah in Halacha. And people need to understand that it's treated completely differently to the way it's treated in any other legal system. And that's why if a man is a rov in a shul, or he's a teacher in a school, or he's got a position of political power, or he's a president of a community, unless it's strictly made for 1 year at a time, unless that's a strict understanding, if he's been in that position for 3 or more years, you can't take it away from him. Even if you've got somebody cheaper who can do the job, you've got somebody more competent who can do the job, unless he's inherently incompetent or immoral, you can't take it away from him. He's got it, it belongs to him. You can't take somebody's COVID away. So these Nassim, Roshei B'nai Yisrael, these heads of B'nai Yisrael, these Sorei Chamishim that became the Meraglim, that became the spies, they're entitled to say we want to hang on to our positions. They're valuable to us. We get self-esteem from that. We get COVID. It's true we're using the COVID for our communities, but that still gives us a lot of sense of worth. Halacha recognizes that. But not at the expense of not going into Eretz Yisrael. That not. If you want COVID, that's fine. But don't ask people to pay for the COVID. COVID payment is a different thing. You can't take COVID at somebody else's expense. And that's the principle of COVID. That's the essential principle of COVID. And that's what one has to analyze all the time. And therefore, back to our prime question. If COVID is so lethal, why do we have to give it to other people? We have to give it to other people because as lethal as it is when it's misused, it's absolutely critical nourishment when it's used properly. And it belongs to him. And that was Rebellia's answer to my father. When my father asked, why is it that you can give COVID if COVID is so dangerous? He answered, because it belongs to him. You're not giving him something that belongs to you. You're giving something that belongs to him. You can't go up to somebody who doesn't make a brocha and take his food away from him and say, look, you're not going to make a brocha. That's an issur. You're not allowed to eat. So I'll do you a favor. I'll take the food away from you. It's true you'll die of starvation, but at least you'll go to Olam Haba because of me. That's what you say. At least you'll have a world to come because of me, because I took your food away. I saved you the issur of not eating without a brocha. You can't. The food belongs to him. Even if he's eating treif, you can't do that. Lifnei iver means you can't give him food if he's not going to make a bracha. You can't give him food if it's treif. But if he's eating his own treif food, you can't take it away from him and say, I'm saving you from Gehenna, I'm giving you Elam Haba. It belongs to him, even if it's lethal. Kovod belongs to the other person. It's his. He deserves it. He's entitled to it. It belongs to him. You can't withhold that from him. It's what nourishes him. That it could be dangerous, that's his business. How he utilizes it. He's got to utilize it correctly. He's got to utilize it to give. He's got to reinvest that kovod in the energy to do things for other people. Then it's kosher kovod. If he decides to use the kovod for himself, that's treif kovod. But just as food can be kosher or treif, and it's his business, so kovod can be kosher or treif, but you can't take it away from him. That kovod belongs to him. And that's something that we need to realize in all situations of kovod abrius, with all people, that there's a certain kovod that we have to give them, but more so when it's people we want something from. Whether it's a supplier of a service or of goods, whether it's somebody who's doing something for us, whether it's a parent, whether it's a teacher, no matter who it is, if it's somebody we want something from, if somebody is supposed to be doing something for ourselves, for our children, for the community, the kovod is terribly important and it belongs to them. And we must seek out the opportunities to be mechabed them, to give them that kovod. Because it's that kovod that drives them. It's that kovod that energizes them. It's that kovod that enables them to increase the standards of perfection and of excellence of what they deliver to you.